Hi, everyone. My name is Usha. I'm thrilled to have you all here. I'll start with just saying a couple things. One, at any time, if you want me to slow down or clarify language, please just raise your hand. I'm really, really happy to do that. I know we get into a habit of just getting really excited and talking really fast, and I want to be sensitive that we all speak different languages in here. So with that, a little bit about me. I work for an organization called August. August is an organization transformation consultancy. We work with large enterprise organizations, supporting them in building TEAL principles and practices into their fabric. And we're often Trojan horsing them in. We're not called in to explicitly build TEAL organizations. We're called in because the world is too complex, help us keep in pace with the market. There are all kinds of different reasons that people call us in. So today, I want to give you a little bit of a taste of natural hierarchy and also share with you some stories about my learnings building natural hierarchy within these organizations. And I want to invite you into feeling your own sense of stepping up and stepping back in natural hierarchy, and invite you to ask questions at any time during the session. But before you do, just feel into the field for a moment and feel into, is this the right moment to ask a question or not? And I'm going to be exercising my own sort of natural hierarchy by being really clear about the boundaries around that. So there may be times when I say, actually, just give me a few more minutes to land this point, and then I want to open the space or not. How does that feel? Cool. So before we do that, let's just take a minute to feel into the field together. I'm going to invite you to plant your feet on the ground, if you'd be willing. Just close your eyes and take a minute to just land together. Feel into the unique constellation of people here. You're all coming from lunch. There's lots happening. Just presence all of that. Take a breath. And just land. And feel into the quality of the energy in this room right now. Feel into your own curiosity. And I'm going to hold a question for all of us about what wants to emerge in our space together over the next 30 minutes. Take one more breath. Exhale. Whenever you're ready, open your eyes. Welcome. So I'm going to be telling you three stories today. And the first one, you're probably really familiar with. So once upon a time, we lived in, and this is all about the world of work and organizations. This is not about the broader world, just to give that context. So once upon a time, we lived in a world where answers were knowable. In the world of work, it was easy to know what to do. Sometimes it might have been complicated, it might take time, but if you had the right leader, you knew the answers. And this we looked for leaders who knew the way, who can figure out the way and show us the way. And we really relied on them for that. And for a long time, that worked and served us very, very well, until the context of our world fundamentally changed. And the context of our work world really went from being certain, where it was possible to predict the future, to being fairly uncertain. This is an image of the Google self-driving car. This is how the Google self-driving car is constantly taking in information from its environment and shifting and pivoting course all the time. And this is really the world that we're finding ourselves in, with lots of things changing all the time, with a new degree of complexity that we're trying to find all the time. And it takes a fundamentally new kind of leadership to thrive in this kind of world. But here's the problem that we have. I don't think you can see the colors quite well here, but here you have the orange leaders who are really clear at setting direction, making decisions, showing the way, and taking us there. Or you have green leadership, where we're all equal, we're all around the circle. There's no one person setting direction. We're all setting the direction all the time. And there's no one quite at the center. So we're kind of trying to find our way, and it can get a little bit confusing, it can get a little bit fuzzy, unclear, messy, toxic sometimes. So you have all these leaders who are trained in either one of these two forms. And really what we're looking for is this kind of leadership. This is living systems leadership. Leadership where, as a group, we're constantly feeling into, do I need to step up in this moment? Do I need to step back in this moment? What does this moment need to achieve the purpose of what we are trying to achieve right now? And who does it need in each moment? And what does it need of me in each single moment? So I'm going to frame our journey a little bit. So in trying to implement this, I'm obsessed with this. I'm fascinated by this. I want to create this all around the world. I really believe that operating as a living system is our best shot at solving the problems of our world right now. And it's been quite a journey trying to weave that into the fabric. So I'm going to share a little bit with you about what that work has looked like in the I, the interior, personal, the individual interior experience, in the we, in the individual collective interior experience, individual, group dynamics, systems and structures. So we're going to frame our journey through that. So something that's special about August is that we are a self-managing company. And I've been working at August for almost 2 years now. And I remember when I first got there, I was thrilled. I was so happy to be part of a self-managing organization. I didn't have a manager. There was no one that I had to report to or be careful about or make sure they liked me. I didn't have to worry about a lot of that stuff. And there was all of the space and freedom to influence the system all the time. And I thought, this is perfect. You just need this structure in place, and actually people can really thrive. And I was mostly right, and also sometimes not so much. And here's my first lesson. I learned that to truly create a space where people can step into their power and leadership and influence, we have to work with our own stuff around power. There's a lot of cleaning up that we all have to do around power. And what we noticed in the system is that the people who default to leadership and stepping in and driving things kept doing that, sometimes in ways that disprivileged the others in the room who actually wanted the space to step into their leadership. And we also noticed that there are other people who felt shy and hesitant to step into leadership. And that's been certainly my journey of being afraid of my own power and really feeling scared, feeling like it's better to kind of be in the background, right? And actually, over time, realizing, especially working in this self-managing organization, the organization, to thrive in its purpose, really needs me to be really clear about when I need to step into my power, when I need to insert my voice and be really bold about that. And also learning when I need to follow, when I need to trust that someone else actually has more expertise to offer in this moment, more insight to offer in this moment, better leadership to offer in this moment. And this doesn't look, this sounds all great and fine, right? But the way that it actually looks is quite messy. In one moment, I might be overshooting in this direction, and another moment, I might be overshooting in that direction. And it's taken us a lot of work as individuals to really get clear about how we want to insert our voice and influence the system and the decisions that we make as an organization. I'm going to pause and see if there's any questions or comments. Yes. Oh, sorry, hold on.
Just a simple question. What does August mean?
Oh, that's a lovely question. That is the name of the consulting firm where I work, that is a self-managing And so we named it, the reason we named it August is because we started the company in August. And it, in true self-managing form, it was the only name that all five of the founders could agree to and felt like that was a good name. And have since had, you know, some days when we love that decision and other days when that just feels silly. There's another question. Maud.
Wanted to ask you what your practices for cleaning up around power have been in the organizations and which ones have worked best, and if so, what have they produced?
So I have a steady journaling practice and a shadow practice that really looks at anytime I get triggered or anytime I feel activated, I try and be really diligent about delving deeper into that. And I bring that into my coaching work with organizations as well. Yeah. And I'll go a little bit more into the we. The thing that we've learned a lot as a self-managing organization is the importance of building trust within our organization. This is a little map. I'm sorry you can't see it very well, but this is a workshop that we've had during our team offsite a couple weeks ago, where we really asked the question, where do we get stuck when trying to lean into tough conversations? And we had a lot of really interesting things come out of that. There was a lack of skill on our team to handle conflict really well, especially from the founders and some of the more senior leaders within the organization. There's a sense of, why bother? Why put myself out there and, you know, bring something up, give tough feedback, bring up something that no one else wants to talk about? I'm going to be jeopardizing my relationship with others within this organization, right? And so we surfaced all of these assumptions and notions and really made a commitment as a team to start modeling things differently. We made a commitment as a team to start getting trained in conflict mediation, and specifically having the founders and senior leaders within the organization really commit to training so then they can start modeling, leaning into tough conversations. And that's been tremendously supportive for our team in starting to operate in ways where we're really looking at the ways in which our group dynamics are playing out, and we're thoughtful and intentional about cleaning up when stuff arises in the space. And finally, there's a practice, this is probably the practice that we're still getting into the most, and I think in the it dimension, it's about building systems and structures that really support us in building our wisdom together. For a long time, we would get stuck in spaces where I have my opinion, Maria has her opinion, Rebecca has her opinion, and when we disagree, we just agree to disagree. There's no way to move past that, and we just got stuck. And what we did to really solve for that is start to create structures that really forced us to have conversations that started to build our wisdom together and actually integrate our perspectives in really deliberate and thoughtful ways. And this is a picture of our recent elections results. We have this, so every 4 months, we rotate roles within the organization. And every 4 months, we elect people into roles within the organization. And the first few times we've done it, whenever elections came around, we would say, do you want to be in this role? Do you want to be in this role? Do you care about being in this role? Or we would default to the founders being in most of the roles. And this time, we really deliberately created a structure where we took a long time to really look at, what does each role need? What do we need from the person who's going to be heading recruiting within the organization over the next 4 months? What are the skills and capacities we need? And who is most suited to actually play that role in a really good and candid way? And that also allowed us to give feedback to each other about our expectations, about what we were maybe afraid of with particular people stepping into roles, and what we wanted to see from that over the next 4 months. So this is a little bit of the learnings from August and being in the self-managing organization, cleaning up around personal power, leaning into tough conversations in a really deliberate way, and really building systems and structures that cultivate our practice of creating wisdom together. I'm going to pause again and ask if there are questions.
Usha, can you give us an example of your own cleaning up around your personal power, if you would?
Yeah, that's a great question. I actually spent, I am a graduate of the Integral Facilitator Program. I graduated last year, and a big part of the 9 months within the program has been me really feeling into my own fear of stepping into my power, and my own fear of misusing power, and that's a fear that I carry with me. I have a really deep commitment to clean power in the world, both to show up and embody that myself and to build that around the world. And so I really spent a lot of time, Cindy Lou knows this, she was coaching me through a lot of this, just feeling terrified of that, feeling terrified of stepping in, having this mixed feeling of really wanting to be seen and inserting my influence, and also just preferring to stay in the background. Like, I would rather be in my hotel rooms, like, sleeping right now on some level or reading Harry Potter than up here on stage sharing all of this, right? There is always a little part of me that prefers that. And a lot of my journey personally has been cultivating trust in myself to step into power and giving myself a little bit of space to make mistakes, because I can't in all integrity say that I'm always clean in my power. I don't think anyone can. We're going to mess up all of the time. And the way that that shows up within the organization is maybe sometimes I give feedback, but actually I'm projecting something, right? And the other person maybe actually takes it really seriously because they value my opinion. So I have a really active practice, I've cultivated a really active practice of journaling and looking really deeply into that and listening to like the very subtle cues of when something feels off intuitively and when maybe I'm coming in from a place that's not fully clean and clear, which is, happens a lot, you know, and we have to just sit with that. Other questions? Any comments? How does that land for you all?
Actually, I'm very curious about the exercises, possible exercises of them, because I have also an experience that trying to figure out the first and the third stage, but cleaning up is generally difficult, really difficult. We all think that we cleaned up, but after leaning into the tough conversations, something is happening. And that cleaned, from that cleaned area, something is arising back. And then the third stage is God knows. You know, at that moment, we are all already in the different worlds. So I'm very curious about the exercises. And what
you can suggest. Yeah, I can share a little bit, just being mindful of time. But on the first sort of piece, something that I do, a practice that I have is morning pages. So waking up in the morning and just writing stream of consciousness, that often tends to surface hidden things in the background. And that's a really useful tool for cleaning up. Exercises around leaning into tough conversations. We deliberately have feedback conversations in triads. We also have deliberately have feedback conversations with mediators. So that's a really useful practice to lean into tough conversations more and more. And we actually created this practice of this here. We created a backlog of tough conversations. So we actually sat down and said, okay, what are the tough conversations we're avoiding right now? Okay, we're going to go to this new office, and we don't all feel good about that. And are we making the right decision? Are we starting this new office for the right reasons? So we started to actually make a list of things and scheduled time to just have those conversations. Because we know that if we just leave ourselves to, you know, have those conversations spontaneously, we're not actually going to. We'd rather avoid them. We'd rather run in the opposite direction. Does that help? And in the third, I will say this, in the systems and structures piece, we pull a lot from Holacracy. It's a really good, it has a lot of really good systems and structures to operate in a self-managing way, to really collect our wisdom together. And self-managing systems, the one of the misunderstandings about self-managing systems is that they're flat or that there's no hierarchy. It's actually, it has more structure in order to create this hierarchy of purpose. Right, in order to create natural hierarchy, there's a lot of structure. So I would really refer to Holacracy for a lot of that. And just, I know there are a lot of people who are informed about Holacracy and have feelings about it, and I will just say mine are like, I think it's really good to address the right-hand quadrants. I think it's missing a whole lot of stuff on the left-hand quadrants. So I'm going to keep moving because I want to share a little bit with you about what we do with clients and how we actually bring this in with clients who are not self-managing. They don't care about being self-managing. They don't want to be self-managing. That is not what they're here to do, right? So a lot of the work there is to Trojan horse the principles and practices. Is everyone familiar with the Trojan horse metaphor? Anyone not familiar with the Trojan horse metaphor? So the Trojan horse, I'm probably going to get the story wrong, but that's okay. I think it was Helen of Troy who was who wanted to, they basically said that they were giving this gift, which is this huge horse that went into the gates, and what they were really doing was hiding warriors inside of the horse, and it was a way to take over the city. So not that we're trying to take over these organizations, the enlightened takeover of these organizations, which is, you know, going in and saying, this will make you more effective, this will help you make better decisions, this will support you in, you know, stretching your bottom line, whatever, speaking their language. But really what we're doing is helping them clean up around their power, helping them have better group dynamics with each other, have psychological safety with each other, and structures that actually really support them in that. So this first story is about coaching leaders in growing up and taking more and more perspectives and cleaning up around their own power. We had this amazing executive director of this large nonprofit that we were working with, and she was one of the toughest clients I've ever had, and also one of the most loving clients that I've ever had. Well, I feel love for her. I don't think she's not a loving personality necessarily, but I have a lot of love for her coming out of our relationship. And one of her problems was, I'm always the one holding the strategic perspective. I'm always the one driving all these things forward. My team is just not helping me with any of that. I have too much on my plate. I'm working 70 hours a week, every single week, and I want them to meet me, but they just can't. Maybe I have all these really talented technical managers, but they're not actually, you know, good enough to like meet me there. And what we realized actually, and what we supported her in understanding, is that she was, while she had these stories in her head, really what she was recreating is this dynamic with her team where she is essentially over-functioning and constantly taking responsibility for everything so that she had control over everything. And that helped her manage her anxiety. And it's easier to assume that other people are under-functioning and just not competent enough. And every time we make them wrong when they try and step in, so they feel like, you know what, let me actually just kind of not take too many risks, not try too many things. So her entire, her relationship with her team members was in this over-functioning, under-functioning dynamic. And we really had to coach her through starting to build her own tolerance for sitting and being with her own anxiety. Because ultimately, this was a reaction to her anxiety, right? And communicating her expectations clearly enough so that her team can actually take risks in a really good way. And this was really supportive for her in starting to unpack that bit by bit by bit. It's, and by no means is that completely done. Like, my hunch is that her anxiety is rooted in childhood trauma, and she needs to do deeper cleaning up work around that. But this was an unlock for her about trusting herself and trusting her team more and noticing when she projects incompetence on other people in order to stay in control. The next task is really coaching the teams to see the water that they're swimming in, starting to like understand how they're manifesting into particular dynamics. So pulling the thread about the strategic, about the executive director holding the strategic perspective all the time, and the team members just being really good at their jobs, but being in the weeds and being really creative, but actually not thinking critically about how their decisions are manifesting in the broader whole. So we led them through this polarity map, where we really said, we use the analogy of, you know, what are the advantages of holding the 30,000 feet view, which is really like, what's, you know, what are the advantages of looking at the whole, being really strategic? And what are people's feelings towards that? Do people feel some aversion to that? This was a primarily green team, and so some of the orange gifts of being strategic were really challenging for some individuals, right? And on the flip side, what are the advantages of getting into the weeds, really supporting them and thinking critically about their relationship to being in the details, or aversion to being in the details, and how that aversion or attraction actually is manifesting within the team and the group itself. And again, this was really, really helpful for them to start to look at the mindsets and their own tendencies and how they're creating these dynamics together. Finally, the task within organizations is to start to build systems and structures that deliberately distribute authority and start to push decision-making down within the organizations wherever we can, with the intention and the assumption that the people who are closest to the work are actually the ones who have the most information to make the right decisions. So we led them through, this is a decision-making tree, and we had the senior leaders on this team actually like, there was a map of this tree, and they had to write down what are all the decisions that are leaves, which means they can easily be passed down to someone else. If you lose a leaf, it's not that big a deal, right? What are all the decisions that are in the trunk, which means I need to be consulted about this, I need to have a lot of input about this decision, but I don't necessarily need to be the ultimate decision maker about it. I just need to have my perspective be represented because that's really important and critical. And finally, what's in the roots? What are the decisions that I absolutely need to have a say in? Because this affects the entire organization. And this is the executive team of this large organization. And they found this to be incredibly useful. And they had their own feelings come up of, oh, this feels really scary to pass these decisions down, actually. And they've started to build structures about how can I take, if a decision is maybe, I think it's a leaf, but actually it's a trunk, how can I take it back? They had all of these questions come up. And in working through it, they've started to deliberately push authority down towards the front lines. So that's some of the work that we do within organizations and clients, Trojan horsing in these principles, coaching leaders to clean up their own stuff so that they can actually step back and create space for others to step in into natural hierarchy, coaching teams to really see the water that they're swimming in, notice what dynamics they're creating together in order to build more psychologically safe spaces, and finally, building systems and structures that really deliberately distribute authority. Because that's how, you can't have a living system that actually moves naturally this way and that way if authority is concentrated in one central pod. With that, that's my presentation. We have 5 minutes for questions. Yes. Thank you.
Hi, thank you for your presentation. It was very clear. I was wondering, when you talk about holding elections to change roles, how do you deal with the overhead of people changing roles and giving away information? And is it a lot of overhead, or is it okay?
That's such a fantastic question. So the way that we deal with that is actually one of the core values that we operate by and deliberately have systems and structures around is transparency. So there's a lot of transparency and visibility into the organization. So the work of every team, we use Slack. Is anyone familiar with Slack? So we use Slack so that all the conversations of the team are public and recorded. So even if I'm not on the sales team, as an example, but I want to join the sales team in this coming 4 months, I can actually go back and see an archive of where they're at, what they're doing, etc. That's one way we deal with that.
What about the salary system? The salary system?
Absolutely. So our salaries are transparent. So you all can actually go online. We have a public drive where anything we can share with the world transparently, we do, including our salaries. So we have the same salaries for every level within the organization, and you can see transparently who's earning what. And part of that, the reason we do that is really to create equity within the system. And it's not perfect because it's not the case that, you know, two people who are operating at the same level are always going to be contributing in the same way necessarily, right? Maybe in one trimester I take 10 roles and I'm actually contributing way more than somebody else who's at the same level and takes only 5 roles. And another trimester maybe I don't. So we haven't figured out all of the answers, but we do have it very transparent. Yeah, so if someone wants to get promoted, the way that we do it is we have what we call, instead of having a boss who promotes you, we have a development committee. So there's a committee of people who work very closely with you who come together and actually look at these objective markers of capacity growth and give you feedback about whether or not they feel you've achieved those markers and are ready to move to the next level. Other questions? 2 more minutes. Any more questions? Any thoughts?
Just the website at the bottom. Yes. Doesn't seem to be working. It's co.com.
Oh no, it's definitely co.
Okay.
Yeah. If you don't find the public drive where we actually do a minute, you can steal a lot of things from there. If you don't find it, just go to aug.co, and you'll have at the top a thing that says, steal it all. And you can actually, to your question earlier, a lot of the practices that we use to build the sort of I, we, and it capacity to do this work, it's all shared publicly. So you can see support cards that give you very line-by-line instructions on how to do this. All right. Thank you.